Morning, friends.
Morning.
Great seeing all of you wonderful people here today. As always, Usher's going to come forward and give us an opportunity to partner together financially as we do every week. So if you came prepared to give, now would be the time to do that if you want to partner financially with us and what God is up to in and through our community and the life change he's doing in us and through us here locally and also throughout the world. So that's what this time is about. Today, we're going to kick off a new series of teachings. And Steve and I thought it'd be fun to try to tackle it together and see what comes out. It's kind of a little experiment for us today. But we know some of you that are new to our community and kicking off the year. If you're not familiar with us, we tend to share the teaching responsibilities here at the church.
And those of you that have been here a while know that this is how we compensate for being half ready.
That too, but my positive spin sounded much better.
You tell them, Pastor.
So that's what we're going to experiment with that for a little bit and see how it goes. And so today, we're kicking off a new series of teachings. And what we wanted to do was we wanted to talk about decisions and how we go about making decisions, how we go about making choices. Because whether you realize it or not, making decisions, choosing, is one of the most spiritual things that we do. And so it's whether you put it in a category of, okay, is it this life-changing type of decision? Here's this this major significant choice that I'm facing in my life that's going to send my life in one trajectory or another. Or whether it's just the moment-to-moment type of decisions. Maybe it's an integrity decision. Maybe it's a moral decision. Maybe it's a how you choose to spend your time, decision in this one particular moment. Regardless, all of us, we're making decisions all the time. And so what we wanted to do was, okay, let's talk about how we go about making those decisions, how we make those choices, and what are some of the filters that we need to have in place when we're making decisions, regardless of what they are. And so what we're going to do for the next 4 weeks is we're going to give you four questions. Here's questions that you should be asking and putting over top of the decisions that you're making just to serve as filters to help you process through and hopefully all of us make the best decisions possible.
So today, talking about how we even go about making a decision has everything to do with what's where we're listening. If you go and look at the word decision, it's actually comprised of two words: d, meaning off, and cision, meaning cut. Like incision would mean cutting into. Decision means to cut off. And so when you're making a decision, you have this issue, whatever it is that's in front of you, a decision is based on some kind of value system, some kind of hierarchy of needs or desires. You cut off the stuff that you don't value. You essentially take the thing and you lop off, for what right or wrong, you lop off the parts that don't have value, that aren't necessary, that you don't want. And so a decision is essentially trying to get down to the remnant that you're deciding in some measure that you're going to live with. That's what a decision does. Here's the part that I want left. So you come to a or B kind of decision or a multiple choice. It could be huge, it could be small, but decisions are always, 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 always playing themselves out in our life. It's a central component to what it means to be a human being. I was just looking at the amount of decisions. I was reading an article about it. That we make in a day, and it tires our brains out. Some decisions, they give us life, they inspire us, and we like making them, but a lot of the decisions that we make throughout the day, it wears your brain out. It absolutely wears your brain out. Just with food, just with the issue of eating alone in a day, this one particular group of people were asked, how many food-related decisions do you think you make in a day? And the combined answer was somewhere between 14 and 15 decisions on food a day. But when they really went through it statistically and named every one of the, even down to the minute decisions about eating, it's on average for an American, 220 decisions just on food every day. By the time you go to bed tonight, am I really putting more salt on this? Am I really going to Krispy Kreme for dinner? Am I really, the decision after decision. Yeah. Again. So that's just food. What about all the relationship decisions? How many decisions got you here? And got you in here, and went. And so what we cut off, and then the remnant that we decide to live with, there is a way that we get to that. So if we start in the Bible, and we go all the way back, all the way back to the beginning, into Genesis, we find that God speaks existence into existence. There's nothing, and then there's something, and it's good, and he makes this, and he makes this, and he makes this, and it's good, it's good, it's good, and then he makes human beings, and he looks across everything that he's made, and he says, it's very good, and then human beings, he says, are made in his image. So every one of us, this isn't a religious observation, every one of us, as human beings, reflect something about what God is like. We're made in his image. And so, unique to everything else in creation, we're made of all the same stuff, but unique to creation, human beings carry around something about the essence of God. And so God makes these human beings, and he puts them in a place that can best be described as a garden. Just absolute beauty. And what he says is, have a great time. Be fruitful and multiply. Take everything farther. Use your minds and your hearts. Create beauty. Create culture. Create art. Explore everything that I have made. I'm giving it to you to manage. It's yours. I give it to you. So this is how our story begins. This is what we're about. This isn't a big religious story at all. This is a story of humanity. Well, many of us are at least vaguely familiar with how the story goes very early on. There's all of this that we're given, and the primordial human beings, Adam and Eve, find themselves at a fork in the road. They're at a crossroads. They have to make a decision. We get to Genesis 3, and the serpent shows up. The serpent representing the incarnation of evil, of anti-God, anti-beauty, anti-love, anti-kingdom. It's selfishness in an intangible form. And the snake shows up and looks at Eve and says, oh, come on. I mean, that's really a summary of what he says. Oh, come on. You're not going to die. Just eat it. See, God had given all of this, there's this one tree I want you to stay away from. Stay away from this one tree. You get all of this, but there's this one tree. Just leave it alone. And the snake says, come on. It's not going to do anything. God's just scared that when you eat it, you're going to become competition. Because he's like a broken brother-in-law or something. I mean, he's really weak. See, and we've said this before, and I want to say it again, that in the beginnings of the story, that the devil, the serpent, the enemy of love and God, isn't trying to create atheists. He's trying to create theists. He's not saying there's no God, you imagine that. He's saying, oh yeah, he's over there. He's real, but he's not concerned. You want to enjoy your life, you're going to have to go about things your own way. And so we get to verse 6 in chapter 3 of Genesis, and it reads this way. When the woman saw, or maybe you could say when the woman agreed, that the fruit of the tree was good for food, pleasing to the eye, and also desirable for gaining wisdom. Now, I want to stop right there, because it doesn't say when she saw that the fruit was going to work like a grenade, or the fruit turned out to be a way that she could take over the world. It doesn't say that. It's three good things. When she sees that the tree is good for food, Eve needs food. She's designed to eat. When she sees it's pleasing to the eye, beauty is important. The whole garden is full of it. And desirable for gaining wisdom. We're made in the image of wisdom himself. Learning how the cosmos works, how relationship works, how what goes on in my own mind, how that works. We're going to be discovering that stuff forever. Those are good things. So these aren't three evil things. She sees the three good things. The tree is good for food, pleasing to the eye, good for gaining wisdom. But she has the entirety of the garden to live in. But suddenly, this one moment, this choice, this fruit, is screaming way louder than God. She took some and ate it. She also gave some to her husband who was with her, and he ate it. Adam's not quoted as having said anything. He's just standing there. His whole job in Genesis 3 is he sticks out his hand and goes, and eats. He may have said something, and the author just wanted to move the story along, but he's not quoted as having said anything. He just gives his consent. Yeah, let's do it. I can't think of a thing better than this. And so here's what's going on quietly in the story as you read it, is that there suddenly becomes a second voice. The first voice of creation, remember, let there be light, Let there be, let there be. It's beautiful, it's good. Eat, enjoy, live, take it all further. You're mine, I love you. The first voice that's for us. Now there's a second voice that's louder that says, you're going to have to count on yourself, on your gut, if you want to enjoy your life. If you want to get, if you want to squeeze any enjoyment out of life, it's not going to come from that guy. It's about you. It's about your impulses. And there's a second voice of fear and survival and self-preservation. The second voice is very, very, very loud, and it wins out. And some of us gathered here today know precisely what this is getting at, because some of the biggest regrets in your life, recent or all the way back when you were a kid, have to do with this moment where the first voice couldn't be heard anymore. Where teenagers who swore all the way through Sunday school, or maybe you didn't go to church, and you said, Mom and Dad, I'm going to do it the right way, and then you're at a party on Friday night, and you're doing and saying and becoming things you said you'd never do, and I can't hear that voice anymore. Ah, that's kid stuff. And the second voice wins out. Some of you, you worked your way all the way through school, college, graduate school, and you were going to change that career field by being a man or a woman of integrity. And after the second year, you realize that stuff doesn't really matter, because if I just trim this corner and sign that for this person and just push this through, nobody really gets hurt. And suddenly, the first voice can't be heard anymore. You have trained yourself to live in submission to the second voice of fear and impulse and self-preservation. As a student minister, I remember sitting oftentimes with parents and their child freshly bailed out of jail, still inebriated, whatever. And they're sitting, and the mom or the dad is up in arms. What do I do? What do I do? What do I do? And it always came down to one thing for me. And that moment came down to just one thing. And I would turn to the kid and say, when you did X, Y, Z, was there a voice in your head that said, this is the wrong call? And most of the time, I would get eyes dropped to the floor. Yeah. And I would say, good. That's good. But when they said, no, that was very bad. Because they'd already learned at a young age to ignore the first voice that we're all born with. The first voice is the voice of life. The second voice is the voice of survival. And it comes down to, with all the noise in your head when you face a decision, big, little, or medium, what voice do we submit ourselves to?
In John chapter 10, Jesus is painting a picture. And he's painting a picture of a shepherd who has his sheep. And he's inviting his sheep to follow. And he's, you know, playing out the role that God is, in this metaphor, is this shepherd, that Jesus is the shepherd of these sheep. And this is what he says, John chapter 10. He, meaning the shepherd, calls his own sheep by name, and he leads them out. When he has brought out all his own, he goes on ahead of them, and his sheep follow him because they know his voice. But they will never follow a stranger. In fact, they will run away from him because they do not recognize a stranger's voice. And so the challenge for us becomes, how do we tune ourselves back in to God's voice? When, with all this noise that's going on around us, and when we start to let this second voice become louder, we have to ask ourselves, okay, what voice am I listening to? What voice am I actually letting lead me and guide me in my life? And so we have to say, okay, now if this has become louder for me, how do I start to recognize God's voice? How do I let this become the dominant voice that I'm paying attention to and that I'm listening to? Now, it begins with the more that you spend time around with God, then the more easily you're going to learn to recognize that voice. You're going to start to be able to pick it out more in your head. Growing up, my dad, some of you may have had this experience with a parent or with a friend, but we could be in a huge crowd of people, and my dad had this whistle, you know? And so when his whistle came, I knew that was my dad. I mean, it could pierce across a baseball field, you know, and all these different fields all around, and I could hear it, and I knew that was my dad. You know, it's interesting. Steve and I, we've been, you know, friends for more than, you know, a decade now, and we can be here in the lobby, and there will be hundreds of people all packed in here, and Steve's got this little thing that you do. He Yeah, that little thing. You know?
And does... it's a killdeer. It's a bird. Well, actually, it sounds more like a dolphin with a lisp now.
That's right.
It used to sound like a killdeer.
It's got to make its way through all that beard. You know, it comes out a little awkward now.
Yeah, I actually started that about a minute ago. I just got out.
But, yeah, I mean, I can hear that, and I can know that, and I can know it's him, and it'll immediately kind of whip me around because it's we've spent time together. We know each other. I've learned to recognize, you know, his voice and when he's trying to get my attention, and it's the very same way with God. And that's what we hear many times is, okay, well, you spend more time with God, but it needs to come down a level of practicality for us to get some more handles on it and say, okay, how do I begin to discern what his voice sounds like? Because I want to spend time with him, I know, but how do I separate that and distinguish it from other voices? And one of the major things that I would encourage all of us to do and that I've discovered on my own is just you need to just pay attention. Simply being willing to pay attention to what's going on around you. What are the themes that keep echoing back to you? Every time that you open up the scriptures, what are the themes that keep echoing back? And you've experienced some of this, and you haven't known what to call it or what to label it at times, but When I listen to a teaching, or then when I'm reading in this book, and then when I'm having this conversation with someone, there's this constant theme that keeps coming back. And rather than just dismissing that, but having the willingness to stop and to pay attention to it, to start to take some time to reflect in your life and saying, okay, what are these themes that keep echoing back and paying attention? Because that's one of the way God speaks to us, is this pursuit of us, this Father that keeps coming to us, lovingly pursuing us, and so that we'll listen to him and allow him to lead us into life. But another part of that for me is this willingness to ask God specific questions. Now, a lot of us kind of have this built-in fear of asking God questions. One is because we think if we ask God very specifically something and we don't get a specific answer, then our faith is going to crumble. It's like this test for God, and it's a test for our own faith. If I ask God a very specific question and I don't hear anything, then all of a sudden this foundation of my faith, it's going to get rattled somehow. And we don't recognize and realize that this is a journey that takes time. It takes years. When we're talking about getting to know one another and spending time relationally with someone, I mean, you're talking a long period of time to start to recognize that voice. So this courage to keep asking specific questions, not just this general, God, I'm here, you want to talk to me, but asking God specifically. But another thing for us that drives that is many times we've just already decided in our minds, okay, I don't think God speaks. So I don't need to ask him any kind of specific questions because, yeah, God may exist out there and he's kind of running the universe and cares about things like world peace, but this interacting with me, this intimate knowing of me, that yeah, God's not really interested in that. And so there's no reason for me to bring my little problems or my little things before God. And so we choose not to ask, but rather trusting that what God is asking and inviting us into is an interactive relationship with himself, and so that we'd have the courage to ask very specific questions of God and then listen and discipline ourselves to listen. Now, one of the things that I always wrestled with was, okay, how do I discern what God's voice sounds like then? Now, I've never heard God's voice out loud. I've never heard him speak out loud in terms of coming out of the sky and this booming voice. But I do think, now I think God can do that. And I think God may choose still to do that. I've never experienced it myself. But when you're listening, and when it talks about listening in your spirit, listening in your mind, what thoughts come into your mind? You know, what's when you're listening, what are the thought patterns that are happening, conversation that's happening within you? And so the challenge becomes, is that my voice that I'm hearing? Am I driving that? Is it something outside of me that's driving that? Is it, you know, my fears, my insecurities that's driving that? Is it this bad bean burrito I had the night before? Is that driving that? You know, what is it that's really causing these different thoughts that I'm having in my head? And so about 10, 11 years ago, I read a book by an author named Dallas Willard. And he wrote a book called Hearing God. And it was the first time I ever heard someone begin to unpack, here are some distinctives that mark the voice of God. And I found it extremely helpful for me. And I've used these kind of guides, you know, really over the last, you know, 10, 11, 12 years to try to help me start to discern, okay, that's me, that's something else, this, okay, that's God speaking. And so we talk about this a lot. We revisit this, you know, from time to time in here, but we really feel like it's critical and helping all of us. If we're really going to journey after God in this interactive relationship with God, then we need to learn to pay attention to his voice. And so this may be helpful for you to write down. I want to give you these three things real quick, to kind of these distinctives that mark God's voice and hopefully it'll help you in the journey. First thing is this.
It will always sound like Morgan Freeman.
Yes. Number one.
Aren't you going to be disappointed if it doesn't?
I am, because he's got the best voice. It should be like 1A. It's not going to sound like Gilbert Gottfried, you know?
Yeah.
Because if that was, then I don't know. That'd be weird. Anyway, all right. Number two is that God's voice is always marked by this weight of authority. Really, that when God speaks, there's a weight of authority with it. Now, if you had a healthy relationship with a parent, you know, sometimes a mom carries this, sometimes a dad carries this, maybe with a teacher or the principal, the boss or some kind. When that person of authority speaks, it carries with it a certain weight of authority. Not in this, you know, tyrant type of a way, but when they speak, it carries weight. And when God speaks, there's a weight of authority that comes with it that you need to understand. When God is speaking to you, he's not trying to argue with you. God is not trying to debate with you. He's not trying to convince you. He's not trying to persuade you. He's not trying to bargain a deal with you and let's make a deal. When God speaks, he just speaks. There's a weight of authority when God speaks, you know, at the very beginning of the scriptures, and it says, let there be light. There's this weight that just comes. He just speaks because it carries the authority. I mean, it's God speaking, and it has a weight of authority to it. And so that's the first thing. The second thing that you should always pay attention to is that the voice of God is always consistent with the Spirit of Jesus. It's always consistent with the Spirit of Jesus and the voice of Jesus that we find in the Scriptures. The Scriptures say that when we've seen Jesus, we've seen God, that Jesus is God in the flesh. And so what we see in Jesus' voice and throughout the Scriptures is there's this firmness to it, but there's also this gentleness to it. That the voice of Jesus in the Scriptures is never hurried, it's never anxious. It's never driven and motivated by guilt. It's never trying to manipulate us. And so there's going to be times when you hear these thoughts that kind of go through your head, and it happens to all of us, and they're voices of guilt. They're voices of shame. It's, who do you think you are? You think you at church, you following God, you think he actually, after everything you've done, we hear those kinds of thoughts. And you can dismiss those. Those aren't God. God's never driven by guilt and shame. And trying to communicate with it. Sometimes it's hurried. You know, it's really anxious. Oh, you've got to do this right now. And if you don't do this right now, everything's going to crumble and fall apart. Yeah, the voice of Jesus, never hurried, never anxious in the Scriptures. And so when you hear those, you can start to sift through those. Okay, that's not God. That's not God. And lastly, that when God speaks, that he doesn't contradict things he's already clearly spoken in the Scriptures. That God, by definition, is truth incarnate. And God can't contradict himself. And so there's things, certain things in the Scriptures that God has clearly spoken and that he's not going to contradict something that he's already said. And so, for instance, if you're sitting there in this relational tension with someone and you're feeling this thoughts that come through your head of figuring out ways and calculating ways that you can seek revenge on someone, and there's this great plan that you come up with and you're like, oh, maybe God gave me this plan. No, God's not calculating a plan for you on how to seek revenge on someone. You're sitting around with people and, you know, it's like, okay, how do I elevate myself a little bit and put this other person down? And I've got this juicy gossip on someone and I think it's important that everyone else knows, and I can put it in the form of a prayer request so it sounds really spiritual, but, you know. This tendency to want to gossip and to do that, that's not getting driven by God. Or, you know, when you have this, you know, process in your brain that's justifying in your mind, oh, this is why it's okay for me to, you know, to look at pornography, and this is why it's okay for me to have an affair, you know? I've come up with all these justifications and these reasons of why it's okay because of my particular situation, because of my particular circumstances. Man, you can say, okay, wait a second, that's not God. That's going to contradict something he's already clearly spoken to. And so what happens in my mind, at least, is it's kind of like Minority Report. I don't know if you remember that movie from long ago. And so they're sitting there on this big wall, and you're kind of sifting through things. And it's like, okay, that's not it. That's not it. Okay, that's not God. That's not God. And it starts to try to pare down, okay, what are the things that I'm hearing that match these three lights? And hopefully over time, you're going to start to, that's going to happen faster and faster. It doesn't happen quickly ever at the beginning, but you're going to start to discern what that is more so over time.
Yeah, and as he's saying that, I'm realizing, like many of us have if we've been on this journey for a while, that it not only does it not happen very quickly, but it does not happen alone these points of listening for God's voice to make a decision, sorting through that second voice to hear the first voice. And so it's going to have the weight of authority. It's going to be aligned with the Spirit of Jesus. Won't contradict Scripture. That last point, especially for me, that there's a vast, vast difference, 180 degrees of difference between it contradicting Scripture and then contradicting my interpretation of Scripture. We go, hopefully, if you're growing, almost daily, that your view of what's true about the Scriptures gets contradicted a little bit by God's Spirit and by life. And so, how do you know? You got to have people. You have to have people that you link arms with, to your right and to your left, in front of and behind, that you do this faith with. This whole, well, it's just me and God, a personal relationship with God, this strictly vertical kind of relationship that I have with the God of the cosmos. It's nothing less than that, but you're missing out on the wholeness of our faith, of our common faith. And so when you go all the way back to, like we were talking about in Genesis 3, you have Eve submitting herself to that second voice, that voice of impulse, that voice of self-preservation, of selfishness, and Adam standing there mute. So it's not I'm not making an exclusive marital point, but let's just talk about in the context of any relationship, how much different history would be if Adam would have just said something. Eve, wait. Look, all we can think about is this tree right now and the sense of haste and impulse and self-preservation against a God that may or may not be interested in our lives. Wait. Let's not forget our greater story here. Look around at the garden. Look around. Oh, yeah, you're right. Yeah, let's turn the snake into a belt and let's go live our lives. I mean, think how short the Bible would be. Chapter 3, the end. How much different our lives, the trajectory, the vector? Let's pick a word.
That works.
How much different the path of our life would be if we had a community of people around us that spoke. Solomon asked God for anything. God said, whatever you ask me for, I'm going to give it to you. Doesn't ask for money, doesn't ask for power. He says, I want wisdom. Give me wisdom so that I can be the person I need to be for Israel. And God's like, exactly. I'm going to give you the other stuff you didn't even ask for, but yes, wisdom. So Solomon is the wisest man in all the world. And when he gets that wisdom, he grabs a pen and writes, plans fail for lack of counsel, for lack of having other people to bounce ideas off of. But with many advisors, they succeed. That's Proverbs 15. The wisest man in the world said, don't do anything by yourself, even if you're the wisest man in the world. You've got to have people you can bounce things off of. You've got to have people that you can say, does this seem to carry the weight of authority? Does this seem to align with the Spirit of Jesus as we understand him in our lives and in the Gospels? Does this seem to go in alignment with the Scriptures or to contradict? Help me make this decision. Help me understand, is this something else going on? Is this more the second voice, the voice inside of my own head? You've got to have people around. You've got to have other people that are further down the path than you and that are at your sides to help you. Now, what, unfortunately, and I mean this with respect, and this is true of me, we prefer, when we lose sight of growing and becoming what God has us to be, we prefer to have people around us that cater to the second voice. Dude, leave her. She's annoying. You're better than him. You are so much better than him. Cut the corner. Sign the form. Do that. Stop doing it. We kind of like to have that kind of cheerleading section behind us that bolsters our confidence that the second voice is the most rational, the most reasonable. Hey, this needs done now. And so those are the easy relationships. What I'm saying, what I believe Solomon was saying, what I believe Jesus is saying, what I believe the thrust of the Scriptures is saying is you got to have people that'll disagree with you, that won't leave you. But you got to have people, I've got to have people that challenge us to say, whoa, this has everything to do with the screaming, hasty, scared second voice and not much to do with the voice that's quieter, that's slower, but wants to lead you into the best life possible. You've got to have people that do that. You've got to. So what kinds of questions then would help you discern? You've got one decision to make. Maybe it's a small thing, seemingly small. Maybe it's epic. It has to do with years to come. You've got this decision. What are the questions you fire at it? How do you think about this? Well, Jonathan and I, we recognize something very recently, that we both have bottom lines. When we're preaching a message or when we're counseling with somebody, we both have, they're complementary bottom lines, but they're different. What I'm always, always, always asking or trying to help other people ask is, can you sort through what you actually are thinking? What the voice inside your own mind? Are you asking questions about your own fears, about your own insecurities? Because as you get older, you rationalize them. They seem more solid. But let's go all the way back down and really listen to this voice, your impulses. Do you really know what that is? Where Jonathan comes at it from the side of, are you listening for the voice of God, and do you have the courage to do what he's telling you to do? So we're both, we just recently found out, we both counsel and speak and try to guide people to listen to the voice. Are you aware of which part's the second voice? And which part may be the first voice? So how does this play itself out with those two sides of the same equation? So let's pick on something. Let's talk about relationships. There's all kinds of ways to define relationships. We're all in relationships in different ways. But let's apply a couple of general principles, and then we'll tease them out on our own maybe later on or in the context of our groups. But let's say you want to get into a relationship. You're single, and you want to get into a relationship. On the side of the bottom line for me, that second voice, getting into this relationship with somebody, are you aware of which parts are the second voice and which parts are the first voice? Because the second voice, the voice of fear, the voice of sometimes cowardice, says, I need to go out with this person, I need to marry this person, and it really has everything to do with I don't want to be single. I don't want to be the last single guy. I don't want to be left alone. It comes from a second voice of society that says, until you're married, this is especially true in the church, unfortunately, but the church has twisted up this value to say, until you're married, you're not complete. Go to a reunion. Go to your 20-year reunion and listen to how they ask about marriage. Are you married yet? Yet. Because that's the goal. If you're not, you haven't arrived, loser. But in the scriptures for God, no, your singleness is a gift. There's something that I'm trying to do. To ask a question, am I submitting myself to this twist that the culture has put on it, that I'm a half person looking to be completed by another human being? Do you know how that sets them up for failure to be your Messiah? Is that what that is? Am I completely enthralled by the idea that my heart beats fast because somebody finally wants me around? Now, see, those aren't evil things, but that's a loud voice that can cloud the other side of the equation when you're asking about a relationship.
Yeah, and so when you're, again, I think one of the things that's important to recognize, too, is that there's, we're talking about this in after first service, too, there's not this magic blueprint all the time. And sometimes when we're talking about this, when we're making decisions in this voice that we need to listen to, which voice are you listening to, which voice are you letting lead you and guide you, that it's not, oh, there's only one decision, and God's always going to lead you to this one decision, and everything is A or B, and if you don't get the right one, then, you know, you're all messed up. But that God is our shepherd. He's our leader. He's our guider. He's not our dictator. He's not saying, here's what you have to do and choose every time, but it's this leading, it's this shepherding, it's this guiding. And so for us to ask questions and to ask wisdom and say, God, I want you to lead me. I want you to be my shepherd, and so help me through this. And when it comes to relationships, that we would ask questions when, you know, God, I'm thinking about getting into this relationship. Is this someone that you think I can honor you more with by being with this person? Can we honor you more than we can apart? Maybe you're in a difficult relationship with someone, and you're kind of asking all these questions about them and what they've done wrong and how they annoy you and all these kind of things, but rather coming to God and saying, God, what would it look like for me to love them well? God, how could I love this person like they've never been loved before today? God, how can I show them respect? Maybe it's an issue with a child. You're in a relationship with your child, and you're saying, okay, God, they are frustrating the snot out of me right now, you know? And how do you want to use this child, my son, my daughter, how do you want to use them to shape certain things in me? Do you want to shape patience in me? Do you want to shape grace in me? And you ask that question with your spouse sometimes. It's, God, how, yeah, what do you want to shape in me through them? And you're considering someone, you know, to marry, and that to say, God, if I had a son or daughter one day, would I really be proud that they would grow up to be like them? If I'm considering this person, you know, that I'm going to point to as a role model, would I be like, oh, am I just settling because it's this thing, I don't want to be alone, or is it, man, this is someone that I really want to link arms with and be in relationship with? And so you got to ask different sets of questions, and it doesn't matter if it's a relationship or if it's, we look at that as kind of many times life trajectory types of, you know, moments and decisions, these significant decisions, but also just your day-to-day, moment-to-moment types decisions. It's, how do I respond to this particular person in this situation? That cutting email came through, a snide remark, you know, someone's just frustrating us. How do I respond to them in this moment? And so that you begin, even, you know, and starts to happen quickly, but you need to bring that before God. God, okay, how do I reflect your heart to this person? How do I not see them as an enemy, someone that I'm against and pitted against, that I can try to cut down and that I can win this argument with? But God, what's it look like to reflect your heart when the scriptures say that the fruit of the Spirit are things like love, joy, peace, patience, kindness, goodness, gentleness, faithfulness, self-control? God, what's it look like to respond that way? And that we'd listen, that we'd pay attention. Say, what's it look like for me to respond with grace, then truth? That doesn't mean I ignore truth. It doesn't mean that there's certain things that I need to avoid saying, but I need to lead with grace before I get to the truth part. And so God, would you show me, give me insight on how that could play out, what that could be.
Yeah, and show me all the ways that the noise in my own head is trying to defend my own borders to my own kingdom. You know, that I should be defensive, that this is up to me, and if I don't win this battle with this person via email or face-to-face or a long-standing thing with my family, man, if I don't win, that's going to say something about my worth. And God, does that come from you, or is that more my own fears about not mattering? See, if you're listening to this, because there's so many different ways that this plays out. I mean, when you're standing in a store staring at a product feeling like, I have to buy this now. It's on sale. I didn't know I needed it a minute ago, but I need this now. It lands in those kinds of decisions. Work-related, relationships, the kind of person you are in traffic. If you're listening to this and you think, man, this is going to be mental gymnastics to take this seriously. This is huge. This is a formidable kind of goal to have. It has everything to do with slowing down. Because we can't take our current pace and just try to apply a couple of principles and then now we've got our radio tuned to God's voice. It's about a different, like so many things with Jesus, it's about a different way of living, of slowing down. That you respond, your mouth works slower, you don't hit send right away in an email, you ask questions when you're in a conversation. How do I actually feel right now and why? You're still trying to pay attention, but you're asking yourself that. Man, there's some noise in my head. I'm really uncomfortable. Oh, you slow down. And I give this advice to people, and sometimes people will say, well, it sounds like, heaven forbid, it sounds like you're telling people to second guess themselves. That's exactly what I'm telling people to do. That it makes you slow. Now, the idea is with wisdom, you begin to speed back up because you learn to live a different way. But it's exactly, if Adam and Eve had just slowed down and said, you realize we're talking to a snake? To slow down and to talk to each other and to listen, what voice gets to be master in this moment and then this moment and then this moment? It's a different way to live. Not just a simply different way of thinking. It's a different way of living that makes you, in yet another way, beautifully different. Even down to the ways that you make decisions, it makes you yet again beautifully different. It's a beautiful alternative way of living that's available to us by Christ.
Yeah, and I don't want to ignore it. We live in a culture that values quick decisions. Mm-hmm. I mean, it really, as a leader, as a decision maker, whatever, I mean, it really lifts up. You got to make quick decisions. But again, we have to remind ourselves, it's not that you don't, you know, that you can't make quick decisions and you lose that aspect of you. But again, when you've trained yourself to do it based on the noise and the second voice, and you've done that for years and years and years, you've got to put a discipline in your life to say, okay, I've got to retrain my heart and retrain my mind to tune back into this first voice so that I'll recognize it quicker and so that I can make quicker decisions, but they're going to be aligned with the first voice and not the second voice. I want to close with this. Proverbs chapter 3 says this, "Trust in the Lord with all your heart and lean not on your own understanding. In all your ways acknowledge him and he will make your paths straight." That word acknowledge in Hebrew is the Hebrew word know, K-N-O-W, and it's this relational knowing, not just a cognitive knowing. It's a relational, intimate knowing. And it says, in all your ways, know him. That in all of our decisions and what we would always be asking this voice, God, I want to interact with you. That you don't want to just be distant and just say, hey, yeah, good luck to you. But you want to guide me. You want to be my shepherd. That your heart is for me. You're not against me. And this isn't some magic blueprint that we're trying to uncover. But you love me. You want to lead me into life, and your heart's for me. So, of course, I want to know you, and I want to know your voice and everything that I'm doing. I want to know your heart, because that's what's going to lead me into life. And so what I hope for our community, here's what I hope for us, is that we'd be the kind of community that would find the pursuit of God and knowing God so valuable that we would say we will intentionally put disciplines in our life to slow ourselves down. That this doesn't happen quickly, that relational knowing with someone, it takes time. And even when it doesn't come right away, we would say, you know what, that's all right. Because I know this takes time, this takes years, but that it's worth it. And we have to start sometime, so let's start now. But then just as important, if not more important, we'd be the kind of community that would actually have the courage to do it. To do what God is guiding us and leading us and inviting us to do. Because it doesn't do any good just to say, I want it because I want to just have conversation, but not act on anything. Because the beginning of this verse there, it says, trust in the Lord with all your heart. That trust, I'm going to have confidence in it, and I'm going to follow. I'm going to follow where he leads me. And what you'll discover is that that's when the voice gets confirmed for you. It's when you actually do it and you recognize, wow, that I did get led into life. And it might not feel immediately, but when you can reflect back on it and say, okay, man, that was God speaking, and it's going to tune you into it more and more. But it's a voice that when you hear it, that you choose to act on it, and you courageously say, God, I'm going to trust you because your heart is for me, and I'm going to let you lead my life. So let me pray for us. Father, my simple prayer is that we would be that kind of community, be the kind of community of people who will link arms with one another, who would challenge one another in love, and that we would intentionally seek out your wisdom and your heart, and we would do that in the context of on this journey together. And that whenever we hear your voice speak to us, we would act and we'd have the courage to trust you. We pray this together in the name of our resurrected Savior Jesus. Amen. Amen. Thanks, friends. See you next week.